Welcome to the PSDcast with your host, Jason Lumberg with Power Systems Design. Now, we've spoken to NanoNuclear Energy before about their portable microreactor technology, and they recently announced an interesting application of said technology, whereby they announced a memorandum of understanding with Vert2Gro Energy Solutions to integrate their microreactor tech with Vert2Gro's vertical farming solutions. According to the press release, the idea is to, quote, address the pressing challenges faced by remote and underserved areas where access to reliable energy and food supply is limited, unquote. And on the line to discuss that is our old friend James Walker, NanoNuclear's CEO. So, James, welcome back to the show, and let's start with this. What can you tell us about Vert2Gro's vertical farming solutions? You know, from NanoNuclear's perspective, what are the tech's main advantages over traditional farming setups?
Hi there, Jason. Pleased to be back. So the vertical farming idea wasn't actually an idea we started with. What actually happened is as we began to speak to remote communities that were needing power sources, it became fairly obvious that places where they have to import fuel to survive are places where they typically have to import everything. And like they might not have the conditions to even desalinate their water. They have to bring in all their clothes. They can't manufacture things. But that includes food, too, because certain soil conditions might not be very good. The climate might be too cold to grow. Livestock might even be too difficult, too. So as we began to work with some of these communities on looking at power solutions in these remote areas, and that could be island communities, it could be in African communities that are quite removed from the mainline grid, it became clear that there was opportunities here not just to give power to these smaller communities, but actually give them a whole way of being independent. And just from a few initial conversations we were beginning to have over here in America, it became clear that there were actually solutions that have been proposed for these remote communities in the past, but the reason why vertical farming had never been successful being deployed to these areas was actually a power constraint. Because if you're going to build these things in these remote areas, you still need to bring in the power and the fuel to run these. And typically, it would actually just be easier to import the food rather than grow it. So we started these sort of conversations up with some vertical farms, and the best one was Vert2Gro. They had a enormous amount of versatility, and what was very interesting too is that they could even grow cattle feed. So if the area was needed to grow their own meat, raise cattle themselves, they could actually feed them relatively inexpensively in whatever area they're in. So you could have both. You could have vertical farms that could grow the lettuce, the vegetables, the fruit, the greens. And then you could also, at the same time, be raising cattle as well on the grains. And so this looked to be fairly transformative because now you can obviously introduce power for a community so it can sustain itself and power its accommodations. It also feed itself, and it could raise its own cattle. And this opens up enormous amounts of opportunities that we were quite excited about because, this has never been done before.
Okay, interesting. Now, let's take a step back for a second. Since we last spoke in September, I believe, what have been some recent developments with NanoNuclear's microreactor tech?
So we've made some pretty good progress since we last spoke. I mean, obviously, we finished up all the detailed design work that we were happy with, but we then needed to move into what's called a demonstration phase of the reactors, where we start doing physical experiments. So things like irradiation of coolants, thermal conductivity testing of materials. Basically, it's model validation at this point. And you go through this phase to collect data so that when you go to licensing, you have real-world physical test data to answer licensing questions. So we're in a pretty advanced stage of this now. And obviously, that's led to an increase in the size of the teams. And interestingly enough, actually, we even very recently bought out USNC's reactor as well, which is a fairly high DRL level, to give us another reactor system that we can develop that's a bit of a higher power than the remote ones we were working on ourselves. And this sort of puts us in the front in the race to produce a commercial product for market. So the interesting thing now, I think, for us is that we've identified where we want to build a prototype. We've identified the university of partners we want to do that with. And now we're going to do probably 1 to 2 years now of physical test work and rig construction so we can emulate the models, verify they're all good. And then based on all of that information, we'll build the prototype and very likely to site that at a university location just because you do have certain advantages with regard how you license a reactor and the costs associated with licensing at the university because it's classified as a research reactor. And so we'll be the next couple of years will be pretty active with us doing all of these experimental and demonstration works and construction projects to feed into that final prototype design. And we will start pre-licensing this quarter for Q1 2025, and we've already obviously started licensing engagement and met with the NRC and briefed them on exactly what we intend to do and our rough timelines and when we might need their services as well to ensure that we can get our product licensed and out to market in expeditiously.
Okay, and let's bring it back to this latest application. You sort of got into this already, but maybe you can underline it. What makes nanonuclear such a great fit for this collaboration?
So this is very unusual because no one's had this sort of collaboration before. But the vertical farms, it's I wouldn't say it's a new idea, but like they've been around for a fair amount of time. And the interesting thing about vertical farms is that you can effectively make the most nutritious, clean product possible. So, for instance, it's even better than organic because even organic still needs to be grown outside, and you still need a certain degree of herbicides, pesticides, and insecticides in organic produce. But you ramp that down towards the point at which the product is produced. But in a vertical farming situation, you feed the exact amount of nutrients in a almost lab setting, so it gets exactly what it needs in perfect conditions. So perfect temperatures, perfect light conditions, and perfect nutrients. So the what you get out is effectively the cleanest, most nutritious possible food you could get. So there was obviously always a benefit of vertical farms, but the issue was that it's still the economics of deploying these things to remote communities that needed them the most because they could not farm was not very feasible because of the power constraints. And so that's why you never saw these things being deployed en masse. Because closer towards civilization, you have the advantage of farming. Further away from civilization, then you have power constraints. So they were also looking, I think the vertical farming industry was also looking for solutions to try and combat this, to make their products more deployable to markets where they were more desirable. And the interesting thing with a microreactor is suddenly the power requirements to actually power a vertical farm are not negligible, but they're insignificant in the total of output power from microreactor. So even if you were powering remote industry or big accommodations, electric vehicles, all that kind of stuff, you could still siphon off enough power to grow enough food for that entire community without significantly impacting the power requirements of that community. So this is kind of revolutionary in some ways, and the thing that makes it very revolutionary as well is that as you come back towards civilization, obviously you get closer to that, you get closer to farming. So there was always a desired destination for these things where farming was just not very feasible. But as soon as you get to those not very feasible areas, then it doesn't become economic to do that. And the financial benefit, is just not there. So it would be cheaper to import the import the food rather than import the fuel to make the food. So this should change that because these are going to be fixed installations that can output power for 15 years. And that means that you will have that constant ability to source power to actually grow this food. And it could be very interesting, the effects of this too, because you could suddenly have communities that can now be independent, whereas before that's actually not been a possibility. All of these communities have had to import diesel on a daily basis, and that creates a reliance on supply chains as well as manufacturers and distributors from more population dense areas.
Okay, now could you describe the initial steps in a partnership, and what are you guys hoping to accomplish by 2027?
So the initial steps we want to do now is that as we build up our reactor systems now, we're doing the experiments, and we've identified where we want to build a prototype. What we want to do now is when we build that prototype is we want to actually build a farm alongside it. So as we build that up, we'll install a farm. And we want it to actually produce a very diverse range of produce. So we want it obviously to take the fruits and vegetables and coniferous and produce, all that sort of stuff, as well as cattle feed as well, to demonstrate that it can be done and demonstrate that the power requirements to actually output a certain yield of produce are significant enough to sustain, say, X population size, 1,000 people, 2,000 people, that kind of thing, and what the power requirements of that look like. Because the interesting part is no matter where we do this experiment, wherever we deploy the system to will be the same. So you can say we do it at a Texas university or something like that. We do it in the demonstration plant, and then we ship it to the middle of Alaska. The power is the same in both places, which means the yield of crop is going to be the same in both places too. So we're going to work towards that. Now we're obviously looking at how we integrate the systems. So the microgrids that would need to be installed, the power requirements that they initially believe we might need, because we want to begin speaking to customers when we start deploying these things about the potential that we could deploy a microreactor with its own ability to produce food. So some of the initial work that we'll be doing will involve, when we speak to customers, giving them the option and then bringing in Vert2Grow to basically outline what kind of foods they might need, how many people they need to cater for, and those kind of metrics. And with that in mind, obviously, then we can work towards finally deploying them, our product, alongside a farming system that can cater towards their food requirements. So we'll do that obviously alongside the fact that as we build up the prototype in the coming years, we'll be building that exact vertical farm alongside it just to demonstrate that it can be done and have all of that data at hand. So when we do start deploying, we'll be able to demonstrate how it has been done, what they can expect, and the evidence for it. And it should be remarkably popular. Like, for instance, when we were putting together agreements with the Rwandan government, they were telling us that I think it's something like 60% of their country has access to constant power, but 40% didn't. And the interesting part about that is that creates sort of a dependence of that 40% of the country on imports as well, even though, you know, it's effectively they are remote communities. But that also means imports of food, and that for the first time you could actually have very independent enclaves of people that can power feed themselves and reduce dependence on denser population centers. So they had a big interest in doing that because it unlocked a lot of human capital, which effectively, to unlock a lot of human capital, you need that energy base and you need to be able people to be self-sufficient to be able to feed themselves. And so it could unlock a lot of human capital in that respect too.
Excellent. Well, thanks, James. I want to thank you for your time. And to our audience, thanks for tuning in and have a great day.